Hi, this is Lou Jameson, or Louise Jameson, listen, and you're listening to the 20 megabytes Doctor Who podcast. Hurrah!
APV Services in association with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, and with me I have Ben Shoveler.
Do you know what? I was just like watching the ceiling collapse, but it did therefore make sure that the camel mystery had been sorted out.
Lovely. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Good morning.
Rhys Parton.
Hello.
And Louise Jameson.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Oh, my.
Hello.
Kirby. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Excuse me, everyone. Hello, Louise.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's a lovely morning today to be stuck indoors doing a podcast instead of outside in the sunshine. Mind you, I don't
know. Have you got sunshine?
Yeah. Haven't you got sunshine?
No, I haven't got sunshine.
Oh. Well, much you can say. Have you got sunshine, Ben?
Hold on. Let me have a look behind the curtain. No.
We had severe thunderstorms overnight in Tennessee.
So. Oh, yeah. And Rhys won't have sunshine because it's nearly midnight.
It's 10 at night.
Right.
And also next Thursday, don't forget that.
Indeed. Louise, I'm going to crack on with a question, if that's all right with you.
Yes, go ahead.
Now, obviously, when you came into Doctor Who, you came in off the back of somebody who'd been there for 3 years, very successful in the shape of Elizabeth Sladen. That must have been quite a daunting thing. How did you get the part?
I didn't find it daunting, to be honest, because of the naivety of youth, really. And I knew that they weren't going to try and replace Liz, because that would just be impossible. She'd done the job so brilliantly. I knew they were going to go for a completely different type of personality in the assistant. So I didn't feel that I was replacing her. I just thought I was becoming the new assistant. Pennant Roberts saw 60 different actresses, and that got narrowed down to 10, and then 6, and then 3, and then me. So it was quite a rigorous process. I went in quite a lot to see him, and he said he gave me the part because they had asked Tom Baker to come in and do reading in the Doctor while I read in Leela, but he refused because he didn't want a companion at all.
Yeah.
He didn't take part of the process, so Pennant read the Doctor, and he said I was the only one that made him work, you know, with eye contact and energy and, you know, everything else.
Excellent. So it's quite interesting you say about the narrowing it down from 100 to 1, because obviously it's recently it's came up, the news has come out that there was someone else originally cast to play Sarah Jane, and then John Pertwee didn't like them, so Elizabeth Sladen got the part. Slightly different scenario there to the way you got the part. So, obviously, Tom did warm to you in the end.
Yes, it took some years.
Did it?
A whole load of stories for a big finish. And I would now number him as one of my closest friends, and I never thought that sentence would be coming out of my mouth.
Would you class him as your favourite Doctor?
Colin Baker is also a very, very dear friend, so I have to be careful here. I like Patrick Troughton very much.
What about Martin Clunes? Because he's also a doctor.
Who?
Very good.
I think he'd be brilliant, don't you think?
He'd be a good doctor,
I love him. I see what you mean, yes. But don't you think he'd be a good Doctor Who?
I think he'd be a very good Doctor. The wife just saw your picture and said, she was in Doc Martin. We love that.
Rhys, I've really prepared you well for this particular link. Have you got any questions for Louise?
Have I got
not
questions?
At the moment, I'll have to...
Oh, no, it's just Rhys.
Oh, no, Rhys, I thought you said Louise.
Yeah, Rhys, so you can ask us questions later, Louise. We'll get it one-sided for the time being. Kirby?
Yes?
Go on.
Good morning. No, I don't... I'm going to have to think for a few minutes.
Oh, dear.
The first episode I ever saw was obviously Elizabeth Sladen last one, so I went directly into watching the Leela episode, so I'm a bit overwhelmed here.
Ooh, you're a starstruck, aren't you?
I've got a question for you. I've got a question, Louise.
Yes?
Did you like your costume, or were you a bit, what am I wearing this for?
No, I didn't mind the costume. I did insist on the flap at the back of it. That wasn't on it originally. I did need to cover my arse a bit. But apart from that, yes, literally, quite literally. So, but apart from that, you know, I just thought it was, I didn't feel, at the time, I didn't feel it was gratuitous, because that's what somebody in the jungle would have worn.
Yeah.
Of course, looking back, how naive can you be? A program that goes on straight after the football results. You put someone in a leather leotard, aged whatever I was, 26.
I don't think many people watching it had problems.
I didn't have any problems, and I was only about 12 at the time.
Well, I helped many a young man through a difficult
phase. Absolutely.
I'm sure you did.
Definitely the best pair of legs ever seen in Doctor Who.
Oh, thank you.
Would you go along with that, Ben?
I quite like Dalek 74's legs that time we saw.
What about Cyberman 90?
Yeah, Cyberman 19, also a cracking pair of pins, yeah.
Just can't take you lot anywhere. So you've been doing some big finishes with Tom Baker recently, I hear.
Yes, yeah, they're brilliant. I mean, I think they're so beautifully written. And David Richardson runs such a fantastic ship with the big finish. The atmosphere is always terrific. And the work gets done very, very quickly. We do more or less an episode a day.
Yeah.
So we've been working very fast, lots of laughter, fantastic lunch delivered. Who could ask? And you get paid. Who could ask for more?
Excellent. So, of course, we just recently watched or reviewed Invasion of Time, which was your last story. And we were sort of remarking on how they shoehorned in the sort of affair between you and the character's name who escapes me. I'm sure Kirby will come up with it for me.
Andred.
Not yet.
Well, he's still Star Trek.
Andred, wasn't it?
Andred, yes.
Yeah. Well, flatteringly, Williams quite convinced I would change my mind about wanting to leave. So they deliberately wrote the story so that they could in it. And he did say to me, he sidled up to me the day before we recorded the last scene in the studio and said, you know, we could just have you running in there and pushing the buttons, coming off on the next journey. Please stay. But I had already accepted Portia and Merchant of Venice down at the Bristol Old Vic, and you know, things weren't too brilliant between Tom and I, so it was just time to move on for me then.
Because
looking back, I wish I'd stayed a bit longer. But then if I had, you know, maybe Tenko would never have happened. It's always a domino effect in this business. So
yeah.
I was, you know, I just went. JNT asked me to go back to see the end of Tom leaving and the beginning of Peter joining. And I said I would do that, but he said, and then stay for a whole season. But I didn't want to do another whole season. I just wanted to do two stories.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I think that was the mistake. That's the one I should have gone, yeah, I'll stay. I'll stay for a whole season with Peter. But we've all got ones that got away, haven't we?
I'm sure people would have preferred to have you there rather than Adric.
I don't think Adric rocked the costume quite so well, did he? Again, nice legs, but not quite to the standard of you. Yeah.
Deary me. Anyway, that's your pretty. Put me off. Just thought of Matthew Waterhouse in that costume. Was
In a leather leotard.
give me a tense, nervous headache.
I don't know. I think Reese has been a bit quiet about it.
Come on, Reese. You must have thought of something.
I think
you
probably photoshopped that picture already.
I beg your pardon.
So, Louise, what was your favourite episode that you did when you were in the series?
The Sunmakers, closely followed by Talons of Weng Chiang.
Oh, yes.
Why so?
I like the Sunmakers.
Why did you pick them?
I like the Sunmakers because Bob Holmes thought it was going to be his last story. So it's full of kind of in-jokes. You know, basically he was giving two fingers to the BBC with the P-45 route and, you know, for the sake of people listening overseas, that's what you're when you leave a job, you're given a form called a P45. So he put lots of little in jokes in like that, and that wonderful Mr. Wolf, you know, that was supposed to be the, you know, the head of the BBC at the time. It's just, and also he separated Tom and I for two or three episodes so that I got to say more than what is it, Doctor? You know, I got a whole chunk of the action. But more than all those things, I just love the story. I love the political content of the story. I mean, basically, it's Marxist philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, freeing oppressed workers. And you know, to this day, there's still ghastly exploitation. Yeah. And that's what he was addressing with the script.
Yeah. Did you like the way that your character was written out? I mean, I think you announced that you were going to leave, did you? And then they wrote it around that, or...?
Yes, but I thought it would be a very, very weak story. I mean, I could have died saving the Doctor's life or something, couldn't I?
Yeah. You'd have preferred that, would you? You'd have gone out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, something very dramatic. I mean, when I left Bergerac,
which I also remember you from.
Oh, thank you. I left, and that was fine. And then they rang me up and said, would you mind dying? Would you mind coming back and dying?
Being I've had murdered. A phone call from many ex-girlfriends.
Slightly less polite, obviously.
But, of course, what it does is it lets, apart from anything else, it lets the business know that you're ready, willing and available for work again. She's tied up in Doctor Who, she's tied up in Bergerac. I mean, allowing myself to be murdered in Bergerac was giving myself a really big favour. I mean, it does mean you can never go back into the series, of course, but in Doctor Who it doesn't, because you just turn the TARDIS back in time. Well, and change it.
That's right.
Would you be interested in an appearance if there's going to be some sort of 50th anniversary thing?
Yes.
I think there's one of my questions.
Shall I say it again? Sylvester McCoy, I've just done a convention with him in Australia, and he said that he thought we should get as many of the, you know, what's been fondly termed the classic actors rather than the old ones back in, but not as their characters. Just do a special with all of us, but kind of quite heavily disguised, you know, with lots of scars and makeup and masks and funny voices.
96.
Yeah, all that. And then, and so it would be like Spot the Extra. So we could just get back in and do two or three lines. I think, you know, for the hardcore fans, that would be a fabulous episode.
Absolutely. That really is a good way of doing it, because we've discussed on here over the last, well, goodness knows how long, you know, how to approach the 50th anniversary and what they can do for it, and whether it would be right to see how many ex-doctors and companions you could bring back, like in the charity specials they've done over the last, you know, over the years, and the 25th anniversary one. And it's kind of like, how could you do it? How could you bring back people? You know, can we bring back people as characters, or should they just be referred to, or a picture of them, or some sort of CGI to bring them back in with newfound footage? Or I think your idea of doing something like that, just bringing the actors and actresses back and putting them in different parts just as a kind of like a nod to them for actually being in the series throughout the year, I think that would work brilliantly.
Yeah, I have to get credit Sylvester for that, not me, much as I'd like to take the credit.
All right, we'll credit you. We're not speaking to Sylvester.
No, we haven't heard him say it. I've only heard you say it.
No, he hasn't called us back. No.
It's not been recorded, is it, by anybody, Louise?
Not being what?
Recorded, this conversation you had with Sylvester.
No.
That's all right, then. It's your idea. No.
I'll claim credit if I were you, then, because as far as we're concerned, it's come from your mouth.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, some sort of goddess of ideas.
You obviously knew your knew the part of Leela so well. You had so many sort of Leela sayings, didn't you? That like she would say things like the Great One, or the, you know, these little put me down.
Shall I get in now, Doctor?
Yes. Were there any of you thought up yourself?
Not that I can recall now. I wish I could come up with, oh yes, this anecdote and that anecdote. But what I did like about Leela's vocal quality is the decision I made not to condense any words. So it was never shouldn't or couldn't. It was always should not, could not.
Yes.
So again, she had a slightly old-fashioned quality to the way she spoke. And that's made doing all the Big Finish stuff very easy. And it's put a very strong rhythm in the writers' minds as well. So I find she's been written for beautifully by nearly all the writers there.
Yeah. So I was able to just slip straight back into playing her.
Yeah. I mean, I have to lift my voice slightly because obviously it's dropped with age. But apart from that, it's been very, very easy to go back to her, yeah.
All right, let's see if Kirby's thought up something. Kirby?
Good morning. No.
Excellent. How about you, Reese?
Moving right along, I haven't thought of anything.
He hasn't thought of anything.
Oh, you two are rubbish.
They're just spectators.
Yes, they are. I could ask questions all day, but my wife's just come in and asked me to ask you if you're doing any more Doc Martin.
Ah, no, it's on the card. I love your wife. It's on the card.
You can have her.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that. It's on the card. but they have been talking about possibly moving the location because some of the Port Isaac people have got a bit fed up with Doc Martin being there. I think they're foolish because they've brought in fantastic tourist trays and they employ a lot of the local people as extras. I think it was something to do with a wrangle over finance for a car park. I think they got a bit greedy and so instead of going to our usual base, we went out to a farm where we had all the makeup and costume caravans. And so what happened was every time anyone said action in the village, and it's a valley, so the word echoes round the hills. Everybody knows you're about to do a scene. So they yell action. People started banging pots and parking cars in the back of shot and then moving them at an inappropriate moment, so the continuity was up to Greek. So it was... So it's got a bit difficult for them, and they just think, "No, well, we'll just move up the road then. We'll go to a different location."
If they don't want the help with bringing people into their little town, then fine, blow them.
It's only a few. I mean, most people have taken to wearing badges going, "We support Doc Martin." It's only about half a dozen people, but of course it's such a close-knit community. It affects everybody.
Yeah. I shouldn't really ask you about Doc Martin so much, being a Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah, but the word, there is Doc in the title, so it's not too bad, is it?
No. I shouldn't ask the questions because it's such a good TV program and it's obviously the most current thing that you've been doing on telly. And I think it's any. And going in and playing one of the main characters, Louise's mother, in such a brilliant way. It was just a fantastic. I'm blowing smoke, but you know what I mean. It was such a brilliant addition to the cast, and to see you obviously after all the Doctor Who things that we've seen you in over the years, it's just great to see you pop. And EastEnders, of course.
I was just about to mention that. Ben, you stole my thunder. How many years were you in EastEnders?
Pepe DeMarco's mum, weren't you?
Yes.
I was, yeah.
Was he covered in grease all the time? Because he did seem quite greasy.
What, in the cafe?
Yeah, well, all the time. Not just in the cafe.
Did I find it greasy? Was that the question?
No, him greasy. Beppe was a very...
Oh, I thought you said it greasy. Oh, him greasy. No, I loved my boys. I loved my family. I really, have four kids in that and a grandchild, and I completely felt like I was protecting them all the time. And they got quite cross with me because we had no rehearsal whatsoever on EastEnders. So you have to come with your lines learned. And in the lunch hour, I would just haul them into my dressing room and just kind of make them bash lines. And the crew always loved it when the DeMarcos went on set because we'd done our homework,
We
finished under time.
It was Beppe, Gianni, Teresa and Nicky, wasn't it? You were the mother of.
Oh, well done, yeah.
Remember Beppe, he had the goatee, didn't he?
I know my EastEnders of that time. That's when EastEnders was good.
What was the grandchild's name? Can you remember? I can't remember.
Frank.
But anyway, back to Doctor Who. When you had your first series, Louise, you had brown contact lenses in.
Yeah.
Why did they bother... What was the point? I mean, were they trying to say that savages had all had brown eyes? It didn't make sense to me.
Philip liked them brown, and Leela apparently means dark-eyed beauty in Urdu or something, some Indian language. Mm. They just thought that a native would have brown eyes because I did, an hour and a half body makeup every day as well.
Or fake tan, all that stuff.
Ghastly, ghastly photos. God knows how they ever got released. I look like somebody had just thrown mud at me.
Have you met any 35-year-old Leelas, by any chance?
35-year-old Leelas?
People called Leela.
I've met people called Leela at conventions, but I'm not, or who have called their child Leela.
Oh.
Pennant said, once he'd done the dubbing on the first one, and Leela backwards is Khalil, you know the way tapes run backwards, it was, make that noise.
Yes.
And he said every time he heard the word Leela, it became Khalil backwards. He said he'd have called her Khalil, he thought it was a nicer name. Oh. Anyway.
I've just looked on Wikipedia.
Oh, that's good.
I know, so it may be true, it may not be true. We'll have to run it and see, I think. It says, writer Chris Boucher named Leela after the Palestinian hijacker Leela Khalid.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if he had done that. It's not anything I can either verify or not, but it really wouldn't surprise me.
I have to say, though, your era of Doctor Who, I can't think of any real duffers. I think I like every single episode that you were in.
Oh, thank you. What a lovely thing to say. I found Horace and Rock quite difficult to do.
Oh, I love that. It was very claustrophobic, but it was brilliant.
Very popular with the fans.
Mm.
It was originally written for Liz, that episode.
Oh, really?
And we were about to do an episode on vampires. But because the BBC were doing a documentary on vampires at the same time, they thought it wouldn't be right for us to do a fantasy story about it. So they pulled. I mean, I don't see the logic of that. I'd have thought one would have said the other, publicity-wise. But anyway, so they had to, in quite a hurry, pull a script off the shelf and dust it down. So there were a few kind of, actually, Leela wouldn't say this, actually, Leela wouldn't scream, actually, Leela... So I had to fight a bit hard there to hold on to the character, and I wanted her to be in, I don't know if you remember, but I was putting a fisherman's jumper with a belt, and I wanted to wear an absolutely enormous one, you know, which would have been, I can't remember the name of the actor now, I'm sorry, the lighthouse keeper.
Yeah. I know who you mean, but
I wanted to wear one of his, you know, just kind of hanging off me, but they were having none of it. I still had to... you know, show off the figure and all that. So that just felt I was fighting to hold on to Leela, really.
Well, I used to have a video called The Tom Baker Years, and in which he went through each of his stories and just made remarks on it. And when it came to Horror Fang Rock, he remarked about your brilliant acting in relation to the way you shoveled the coal into the boiler thing. I don't know what it was called. He was shoveling this coal, and he said, only an actor of your caliber would be able to shovel in a way that somebody who'd never used a shovel was shoveling, if you know what I mean.
Bless him, did he?
You've not seen that. Dig it out. The Tom Baker Years, Doctor Who special.
Now, right after...
Go on, Kirby.
Right after Horror Fang Rock was The Invisible Enemy, one of my favorite episodes. What was it like sharing the stage with a robot dog?
Do you know, John Leeson kind of saved my bacon, really, because there was suddenly a third regular in the rehearsal room. The dynamics changed, and we all started getting on very, very much better, because John got on and still gets on with both of us very well indeed. And, you know, he's got this fantastic love of crosswords, which Tom has, and he loves a good camp laugh like I do. So, and also the BBC had this weird system whereby they hire their own props off themselves. I don't really understand it. They tell me the system comes from America. And that meant we couldn't afford to have K9 the machine in the rehearsal room, but we could afford to have John Leeson, and he literally used to crawl around on all fours. which meant that during rehearsal, we really did develop this relationship with this dog. And so it wasn't until we got to the studio that John was replaced by this tin dog, but we'd rehearsed this relationship up to that point and could then transfer that into the studio. He says it's very different now. He doesn't get to meet the actors. He just comes straight in, records his lines separately, and they're just dropped in, you know, with the whole Sarah Jane adventures and things.
Yes.
So he really misses those days. He said it's the only voiceover he's done where he had to put in for a dry cleaning bill afterwards, because he
that must have just been bizarre, having him crawling around on the floor.
That's method acting.
Yes, he did, bless his heart. He did a sound-alike competition. Do you know about this? His first convention ever in America. They said, how do you want to be introduced? And he said, well, I tell you what, don't introduce me till the evening, and I'll just swan around all day and pretend to be a fan. So he got the badges and the cap and the camera and all that. And then they did a sound-alike competition, which he entered. You know, sound-alike came in, and he came second.
Who won?
I don't know who won. I don't know. Maybe they'll be listening to the podcast.
Was he? Was it sort of they didn't let anybody know it was him, sort of thing?
No, not until. And then they went, well, the real John Leeson. And he spent all day talking to as many people as he could. He tried to. It wasn't a particularly big convention, you know, 300 or 400. So he'd spoken to absolutely everybody he could, and then got himself to the back of the auditorium, and they said, "Well, the real John Leeson, please come forward." And he ran up the aisle, the centre aisle, and they all went. They loved it. They all went mad that they'd been tricked all day, and that they'd all had a, you know, kind of personal word with him at some point. Smashing.
Louise, can I ask who was your favourite alien, good or bad? Whilst working on Doctor Who,
do you know, I quite like the first story. I thought the idea of an invisible enemy was just so creepy.
What with the giant prawn?
Really, like, well, Tom, wasn't it? It ended up being Tom. I just thought that was brilliant.
And it's evil Tom. Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah, I see what you mean now. Yeah,
it's just such a clever idea, and those tripwires making the, because no CGI or anything, making the jungle move behind you, so you could just have this image of, oh my god!
I have to say though, I mean, obviously the invisible enemy is remembered for the prawn, but I think on the whole, it was absolutely brilliant. I think obviously there was limitations at the time, but that was, for me, it was the only negative part of that story was the prawn prop, unfortunately. But the rest of it was great, because the introduction of K-9, you had Tom playing the evil infected doctor, and he also had somebody who used to live on the Isle of Wight, Michael Sheard, who played one of the sort of characters in there as well.
Is that your Isle of Wight mention?
Isle of Wight mention reference of the day. Yes, Louise.
You mentioned the Isle
of Wight.
This is on
the Isle of Wight.
Someone famous once came from the Isle of Wight, shocker.
Queen Victoria used to live here, I'll have you know. Anyway. Oh, shut up. Go on, Rhys.
Okay. Go on, Reece. If you've got a question, you may talk.
Well, I have got a question. Seeing as we've,
seeing well, as we've had only taken 33 minutes to come up with.
Brilliant.
I know. Can I ask it now?
I won't stop you again. You carry on.
Oh, I suppose.
Okay. Seeing as we've had Elizabeth Sladen return to New Who, how would you want Leela to return?
Oh. Well, if she was coming back as Leela, I think she'd probably want to acknowledge that she's now 60. That she has a football team of children, all of whom have had children of their own. I think she probably got rid of Andrew a long time ago. You know, probably after the fifth son, she probably moved on to a different father, to sire the sons. So I think she should be like some kind of Mother Earth, but still, you know, incredibly fit and wise, like a sage. And it looks a bit like the Big Finish stories of made her. There's an episode called The Catalyst written by Nigel Fairs, which I think has kind of captured her as an older woman rather well.
Yes, well, certainly scope for bringing her back in some format, because she was a very complicated character, wasn't she? And they've done it in the new series with making with the girl who waited, with having the old Amy and the young Amy, and there was a staunch difference between the two versions of Amy played by Karen Gillan. And certainly they could...
Brilliant makeup, didn't you think?
Absolutely.
Brilliant makeup, and lovely, and her body language. I just thought she'd really done that well. She hadn't overdone it at all. It was just very subtle, very good.
So hopefully they will do that. Have a word of Mr. Moffat.
Louise, have you been watching the new Who?
I haven't watched the very, very recent ones. I've watched most of Matt's and most of David's,
Who's better, Matt or David, in your opinion? Who'd you prefer? Well, or Eccleston. You can throw Eccleston in there as well, I suppose.
He was lovely, but you know, the job of being the Doctor is two jobs, isn't it? You've got to do the job and you've got to be the celebrity on top of that. And he's, you know, one job he's brilliant at and the other he's crap at. So I think he scuppered himself with the fans a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Because of that. A wonderful performance.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, great Doctor.
It's very difficult to choose between David and Matt. I think what David has is fantastic accessibility. Mm-hmm. And what they both have is this ability to change mood on a sixpence. You know, yeah. they can just, at the click of a finger, they can truthfully go from being highly amused to being furious to being very upset to being, let's save the planet, you know. So, but I think what Matt got wonderfully was, and this is Colin Baker said this, that you kind of can see the old soul in the young body.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I think he studied, I might be wrong, but I would suspect he studied all the other doctors and just tried to get little elements of them all within his body language.
Yeah.
I love what he does.
That's great.
Okay, and as a working actress still, you may not want to answer this truthfully. Who would you prefer to work for their writing, if that makes sense? Who would you prefer to work with, Stephen Moffat or Russell T. Davis?
That is difficult.
Or both
it?
Of them, if you're still looking for work. That's fine.
Of course, I'm still looking for work. I think Russell T. Davis has the edge for me because
love ya.
Stephen expects his audience to come to his scripts with a certain knowledge.
Mm.
Which a lot of them do, because of this, you know, wonderful umbrella story that he puts over the series. Mm. But I find the concentration needed is they're almost written for second viewing, which may be a good or a bad thing. But I never felt that with Russell's work.
Yeah, fair point.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great answer, actually. Yeah, really, really good answer. As you might have gathered, I'm more of a Russell T. Davis fan than I'm going to ruin the show Stephen Moffat fan.
Behave yourself.
I am behaving myself.
No, I so wouldn't say that, because I think what's wonderful about the series is that it's being run by people who were originally fans of it, and I think that really shows. I think there's a lot of tender, loving care goes into the development of the stories. I really do. Well, and my first autograph ever as Leela, I'd done the first day's filming. It was the jelly. Oh, it's true. Then the evil one does eat babies. It was that day's filming, and I'd just finished that filming, and I stepped out of the shower, and there was a knock on my dressing room door, and I, with a towel around me, I hastened to answer the door, and there's this little boy with a pencil and paper going, "Oh, my dad says you're going to be the next Doctor Who companion. Will you sign this for me?" And I did sign it. It was Gary Russell.
Gary Russell.
Yeah, who did give me my...
I take it he came back and told you that story later on, did he?
I certainly remembered it. I didn't remember it as being him, but I did remember it simply because it was the first one.
So before we unshackle you from this show, I just wanted to make sure that Reese and Kirby hadn't thought of something else to say.
Nope.
Excellent. Sorry. You can see why we have them on the podcast every week, don't you?
Because as soon as I ring off, they'll go, I wish I'd said. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, you see, tomorrow morning I'll be saying things like that.
I'll be saying things like that in about an hour, probably.
It's to add an international flavour of quietness.
Yes.
Right. So just you can hear that, you know, there's questions coming from England, the Isle of Wight, and silence from America and Australia, who are either 6 hours behind or 3 weeks ahead. I can't remember which one it is. But we've got a time machine on this show, you see, because Reese is so far in the future. We don't know actually when he's placed, so he'll be hearing this interview.
So
he'll be hearing
people in the United Kingdom wanted to see you live, Louise. Are you going to be doing any stage or any convention appearances in the United Kingdom?
Yes, it's all up on my website, louisejameson.com. I've got one coming up in Milton Keynes. I'm going to LA in February. And I think there are a couple of others in there, but I'm sorry, I should have had them written down. I haven't got them off the top of my head. And I'm also touring my one-woman show, Pulling Faces, which is Barking next Friday and Guildford the following Friday and Saturday, along with several other gigs.
Yes.
And I'm about to perform a new play, which I wrote last year, with Nigel Firth called My Gay Best Friend. That's going into the Brighton Festival every Sunday in the Brighton Festival.
Well, that sounds good. Please note that we have several theatres on the Isle of Wight, so if you feel like you want to come over to the island and for this one-woman show, Bill Oddie's coming
there,
over.
Darling.
Bill Oddie's coming over in April.
Oh,
so
really?
He is, yes. I don't know quite
how. Oh, well, I'd be in good company then.
one more thing. I've just noticed that on your website, which I'm looking at, which looks very nice indeed, you've done
Matt Evenden, anybody wants a new website, Matt Evenden is your man.
You've done a short film, is it, called Cleaning Up?
Oh, yes, just one of
with Mark Gatiss.
Pardon?
With Mark Gatiss as well.
Yes, Gatiss.
Gatiss, yes, I keep calling him Gatiss, don't know why.
You call me Bill, yes, I call you Bon.
And I'm going to take credit for him being in it because they cast me and then they said they were trying to get hold of Mark and couldn't. So because I know Mark, I sent a little pushy email and he agreed to do it, which is just fantastic. He's ever so good in it. It's won awards already.
Excellent.
And there's talk of turning it either into a major film or a TV series. So I'm really holding my breath on that. It's a fantastic character. Really fantastic. And if you see it, please don't give away the ending.
Right, okay.
it's got a real, real good twist at the end.
Why do you regenerate?
Kind of.
Oh, maybe I've given away too much.
Anyway, Louise, thank you so much.
It's been an
absolute pleasure.
All right, take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.
So that was Louise Jameson.
Wow. thanks for the warning. I
wasn't she lovely?
She was. If only I could have actually talked to her a bit longer.
Well, me and Ben thought we'd have a little conversation with her. To give you time to think of something.
I can't believe more time would have been. Reese and I have obviously for the past day been trying to figure out your cryptic Facebook messages about this.
And I saw something on Twitter where he was talking to Toby Heddock, and I just thought, so it's going to be Toby then.
No, we've had him on three times. I think that's enough.
I didn't want to bring up with Louise that I named a cat after Leila.
Why not? She would have loved that.
Yeah, she would.
Well, the cat's name was... the cat had two names. Trillian Leela.
Trillian. Trillian's a great name from Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
Well, my goldfish is about four or five different names. Doctor, Bubble... I don't know what name Isabella's giving at the moment.
What you'll find that is, Adam, is you've had four or five different goldfish. And
no, it's the same one. It's been there for three years. This fish has been making funny shapes with its mouth in our goldfish bowl. Right then, so this week we're looking at a Doctor Who story called The Unquiet Dead. Back to the normal episode. Did we all watch it?
Of course, yes. We all watched it. I'm speaking for everyone.
Now, I'm not going to harp on about how brilliant this series is. I know it's only episode three, but this series is rather brilliant. It opens up with a prequel thing, isn't it? Before you get the title, pre-title sequence.
Pre-title sequence.
That's it, and they're all in. They're in a sort of a rather spooky looking. Undertakers, that's what I was talking about. And there's this rather dead-looking woman, and she suddenly goes a bit weird, and her eyes open up, and is it her son or grandson that seems to be mourning her? Anyway, she grabs him by the throat, and the Undertaker comes in and says, "Oh, no." And,
not again.
Yeah.
I didn't think he came from Yorkshire.
I think he breaks his neck. Because there's a horrible clicking noise as the thing leapt over. What, broke a few people's necks?
Yes.
Nice. But anyway, she gets up
and... sneaks later on.
Yeah, she gets up and walks out into the street and makes a sort of... ooh, sort of noise. Now, Isabella hasn't actually watched this episode yet.
Not surprised.
Mm. Alicia has, but unfortunately was unavailable for this episode of the show. Karen, can you just say...
I'd like to say that Mark Gatiss wrote that. And yes. He's always wanted to write a Classic Who cliffhanger, and that's the equivalent of a Classic Who cliffhanger.
So
he was happy with that.
I'm sure he was. I remember watching the...
Was that brought up on the commentary? I know he was on the commentary, but I did not listen to the commentary this time around.
Well, on the box set, there's an interview with the three writers. I think it's Russell T. Davis, Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss, and possibly... Who was the other one? One with the funny teeth. One who wrote... Anyway.
Janet Street Porter. No.
Paul Cornell. Basically, they were sort of looked like they were sat in a pub and they were discussing how the stories were being sort of developed and edited by Russell T. Davis and stuff. And that, I think there was like a video diary of Mark Gatiss talking through the stages this story went through in its development.
Where is this?
That's on the box set, or the Series 1 box set, somewhere. Very interesting.
Classic Who?
I think it's called The Writer's Table. No, it's not. What did you say?
No.
Did you say Classic Who?
Classic. Yeah, it's Series 1.
Oh, will you be quiet?
Oh.
Oh,
but yeah, but there's on there somewhere is a really good, an interesting little thing about Mark Gatiss and this story. And of course, a long time before it was eventually filmed and aired. So, God, it must have been quite a long time in the process of writing to it going on screen. Because I remember The Sun announced that they'd bought back Doctor Who. And then The Sun announced that they'd bought back the Daleks. There was a long process in between it going into the papers and it actually coming on the screen. It's a bit like the time we've got now between, the Christmas special and the new series.
That's because The Sun are full of... rubbish.
Yeah. But anyway, we meet Gwyneth, played by Eve Myers.
Gwyneth.
Yes.
I found the interview here. Yeah, it's on the first DVD.
Yes.
There's an extra called Waking the Dead.
Always something in there.
Thank God it didn't happen while Louise was on the phone.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been
shut
up!
And tied. Right, hang on.
Oh.
Right, right. Hello, I'm back home. Got a burp.
We haven't heard from Ben in a while. Has he vanished?
Has he vanished? Ben, he vanished. Right, where did we get up to? Sorry. I'll go up to the introduction.
Sure.
The introduction of Eve Myles to the story. I was talking about. Because it was a bit where obviously the woman wandered out and the Undertaker bloke said they got to go out and find her. I think she's sort of slightly psychic, isn't she? So she sort of tunes into the thoughts of what's left of the original woman to sort of think where she might have wanted to go if she'd gone out for that evening.
Hold on.
Yes?
Going out for a fag.
No, I'm talking... For God's sake. So she decides that she'd probably like to go out and see the local celebrity performance of Charles Dickens. And I was thinking, was Charles Dickens really doing a tour at this stage of his life, I wonder?
Yes, he was.
He was?
Yeah, I believe it's on Wikipedia.
Well, that's obviously true then.
I just heard that comment from outside, and that is pedantic and stupid. All right, just don't go there.
Steady on, Ben. Anyway, I don't know where I've got up to now. So they go about trying to find this woman while the Doctor and Rose are having a bit of fun in the TARDIS. And
one thing I noticed was I was watching
a bit of fun, were they?
Well, yeah.
When I was watching the story last night, this kind of got back. We're only three stories in, and when the TARDIS lands, they fall into the floor. It's the old violent TARDIS travel rather than calm TARDIS travel as we now have. And
but he missed, didn't he? He missed the year he was aiming for, so that might sort of partly explain the bumpy landing.
Okay,
it was the rift.
Yeah, it was the rift, yes. And this obviously is very important because this is the first mention of the rift in time and space, which then comes back to haunt us on many occasions afterwards. Idea or was it Mark Gatiss' idea to put the rift into the story? I think probably more likely it was Russell T. Davis.
Probably, because we have the rift being brought up again with, unfortunately, the
vein.
Yes.
And then it leads directly into Torchwood. It's just great.
Yes, yes, indeed. Sorry, the dog's just got caught up in my headphone cable. So
headphones on the dog, and we'll have an interview.
So obviously, Rose, she needs to change into some period gear, and the doctor directs her to the wardrobe room. Unfortunately, we don't see it, but it's quite an interesting course of directions he gives her through the corridors, past the bins, etc., wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What year was it set again?
Was it 1869? Off the top of my head.
1869, yes. Farewell reading. Yes. Between 1868 and 1869, Dickens gave a series of farewell readings in England, Scotland, and Ireland. Well, he didn't go to Wales. Okay.
When do you say farewell? Was that because he knew he was dying? I mean,
Wikipedia just has quotes around farewell reading. So,
did he go to Cardiff?
Farewell, as in it was sadly his last, but he didn't mean it to be his last sort of thing.
Possibly that's what was being referenced in when he has that sad kind of I'm getting old.
Quite possibly, true. Yeah. But did he go to Cardiff? Was there any reference to him?
It doesn't say.
Probably not.
But it is Wikipedia, so he probably did.
But back to the story. Rose gets trained in some period gear, and they wander out. Did the doctor look at a newspaper to realise what year it actually was? Because then he suddenly gets really worried.
One thing, when he looks at the newspaper, he actually buys it. He has money.
Yeah.
He passes a coin to the guy he buys the newspaper from.
Yeah,
which is interesting because
that's the way we normally pay for things in this country too.
Yes.
Well, was it in one of the previous two episodes? He comments that he doesn't have any money, and Rose has to buy the chips.
Mm.
That's true. Pedantic. Good point.
Yeah. Well done.
He's just getting out of it, going in the TARDIS and getting it out.
Yes.
Maybe he'd found his cash card.
Anyway, so they're sort of walking for the streets, and then of course there's a commotion at the theatre where Charles Dickens. There's a brief scene between Charles Dickens and some his agent or something like that. I don't know, but it's the only scene.
Owner of the theatre, or the stage manager, or something.
Yeah, because it's a very small cast this particular episode, isn't it? And
that's what I was referring to, where Mark Geddes may have done some research in that farewell tour, because it seems to have something to do with that.
Yeah.
Where he's just being very melancholy.
Because there's quite a prominent poster in the background that says about Charles Dickens and
The theatre they're in at Taliesin Lodge.
That's it. Friday, November the 24th, 1869. Mr. Charles Dickens and his many and sundry works. Sorry?
Free performance.
Free performance, yeah. In aid of the Children's Hospital. Mm. Yeah. So that's interesting, isn't it? That if it's a free performance, when raising money for the Children's Hospital, how is it free? Because they've got to obviously take money somewhere along the line, haven't they?
What does it say about the Children's Hospital? I didn't see that.
Further down the poster, it says in aid of the Children's Hospital. So,
donation?
Pardon?
Donation?
Something like that, maybe.
Oh, yeah, it does. Okay.
Add a little bit of the heart.
Quite possibly. But anyway, so he goes on the stage.
Well, how does the old lady pay? Yeah.
Well, it's free, isn't it? That's what I'm saying. Maybe they donate on the way out. I don't know. That's what sometimes we do at theatres. They have a collection for a charity. Oh, they wait outside with little pots to collect the coins in.
She's skipping out of any collection by going out through the Morning. Clock.
Morning. Got 12 bongs to sit through now. So anyway, he's on stage and he's giving a reading from his. I think it sounds like probably Christmas Carol, isn't it? Because this is obviously a Christmas episode. It's set at Christmas, but it's not a Christmas special, which is. And for me, it's probably one of the more Christmassy episodes, which is ironic, really. And it's the only Christmas set episode not written by one of the head writer as well. So, if that makes any sense to you. In the middle of his performance, he starts talking about, I think it's one of the ghosts in Christmas Carol, isn't it? And he says, just like that. And this woman sort of goes, ooh, and all that. And what Alicia said about this was really funny while we're watching it. the people are supposed to be scared, and some people are just getting up sort of quite casually and just walking away. They didn't look particularly scared at all. Some of the extras are just, oh, well, I'll just walk over here because the director just told me to, so I'll just amble over here. Anyway, so this ghost sort of starts flying around, and they all go, they're scared, and the doctor arrives, and then the gaseous gelf thing leaves the body of the woman. She just sort of falls, flops into the sea. That was quite well done the way it, when it left her and she flopped into the seat. That was quite good. I was quite impressed with that. And then it disappeared into the lamps and yeah, all hell breaks loose basically. You used to be able to get a gelf figure, which I thought was quite ironic because gelf.
Oh yeah, I've seen pictures of that.
Being a gaseous thing.
That is ironic.
Yes, I don't know because it wasn't solid.
Did it come with some baked beans? Did it come with baked beans?
But anyway,
it didn't work first time. Don't need to repeat it.
Did they
have any beans though?
Will you be quiet? The dead body is sort of carried out of the theatre, and then Rose is sort of chloroformed by the Undertaker bloke, which is quite a gruesome scene, really.
Gabriel Sneed.
Yeah. Oh, so his name was
very Welsh.
Yes.
Very Welsh indeed.
Gabriel Sneed.
I expect he was in Green Death when he was younger.
And he also liked eating leeks.
Fair enough. So anyway, the dead body and Rose are piled in the back of the hearse. A very, very nice hearse, has to be said. Very, very period and particularly good prop.
I think it was a one horsepower hearse.
Quite possibly. And the doctor and Dickens become acquainted.
That needs more laughter. That joke, because that was funny.
And very soon, of course, the doctor nicks Dickens's carriage, and
that conversation in the carriage is brilliant. Yeah, I love
he
it.
Said about I'm a great fan of yours, and he said something.
Fan?
Yes.
What's a fan?
No, it wasn't quite that, was it? Of keeping cool, wasn't it?
It was that. But, it was. Exactly
yeah, he
that.
Did. He yes. did say it that way.
Hang on, I'm just listening to the actual words. He also.
So I listened to it last night, and I remembered with my brain.
No, he's just talking to him about his works and stuff, which wins Dickens over when the doctor starts praising all his work, which is quite funny.
I think the phrase is blowing smoke up his.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the makeup of Dickens. This is towards the end of his life. Did he still have brown hair, or did he have any grey? Grayness, because I have seen photographs of Charles Dickens, and of course, being black and white, it makes everything look grey anyway. So I just wondered.
I'll just jump in my time machine and find out.
On Wikipedia, there's a wood engraving from Harper's Weekly from 1867 where he still has dark hair.
Fair enough.
So,
but anyway, we cut to also the Doctor and Dickens travel in their little hearse thing. Carriage, sorry. Rose wakes up inside the mortuary, and she's just about to get attacked by the dead body that's been rehoused. Yeah, by the gelf thing. And
the funny thing is, she immediately suspects that it's playing around with her, like the autumn. She immediately thought that was students. Hasn't she learnt?
Stop! Yes, right. Stop acting a bat. Yeah, and so she goes and bangs on the door. Oh, it's
Alicia's back.
Yeah, it's the it's actually the young man body corpse that actually attacks her first, making sort of corpsey noises. Some noise.
No one makes that sort of noise.
Oh, is it gas escaping? Is it? Right.
Yeah.
The doctor sort of barges in and listens to the walls, which is
he decomposed pretty fast because he only died about an hour before.
I was waiting for you to be pedantic, and you didn't let us down.
Well, that's 1-1 then.
Oh, I was so hoping he was going to say something pedantic, so as Louise Jameson could have said to him, "Aren't you pedantic?" It didn't come about.
I could have been if I'd had warning.
So yes, so the doctor kicks the door in. It's quite interesting that Rose couldn't get out, and he just kicks the door in to sort of.
Well, the sonic doesn't work on wood.
He didn't even. Try it, did he? No, it didn't. But it had a metal lock, though, on it, didn't he? He just kicked it in.
So did the door in the library.
He tries to have a conversation with these bodies, and he actually does have a conversation with them, doesn't he? Which is interesting, because why do they need Gwen, or Gwyneth, to medium or mediate them if they can actually speak through the dead bodies anyway.
You're talking about the seance scene. Those yes. are more than the two that have come through into the two bodies. There's more of the Gelf coming through the gas.
So you're saying the spokesperson of the Gelf hadn't actually come through, it could have done, and picked up a dead body and spoken through the dead body instead of using Gwyneth.
Correct.
Yes. So, bit of a shame, really. So, yeah, they have a conversation involving some tea, as what normally happens on scenes in between bits of action.
And I like the conversation between Dickens and the Doctor, where Dickens is going, I can't believe this, because things have to be scientific and explainable, and the Doctor is explaining, well, yeah, it sort of is, but they're aliens.
Yeah. Takes him a bit of time. Eventually he does tweak, though. I like the way they've made Dickens' character a bit of the hero in this story, because it culminates that the Doctor cocks things up big time, and Dickens and Gwyneth actually save the day. It's Gwyneth's sacrifice that saves the day. The Doctor actually, his stupidity in some ways, has a hazardous situation develop, because he sort of lets Gwyneth, you know, allows it. I know he didn't know that they were evil, but he didn't save the day. It was Gwyneth and Dickens.
It's true.
Meanwhile,
Sontaran episode of season 4.
Thank you.
Oh, Pernickety Pedankit 111.
I just had to join in.
Thank you. Meanwhile, we have this conversation between Rose and Gwyneth, which is another nice little one-on-one thing.
This is the third episode in a row that Rose has mentioned her mate, Shireen.
Which we never see.
Right.
Which is, it brings me back to the current two series, when we have Mel's appearing, yet there's never been a mention. This is where it would have been nice for them to have been a sort of throwaway mention of Mel's somewhere in the past, because Moffat would have known this is how it was going to develop, in theory. Ben will say otherwise. So it would have made sense,
He actually admitted he didn't.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
He never blooming knows.
But it's a shame that... Because there was nothing really in the 11th hour that actually turned out to be anything but a red herring. So, yeah, they had this conversation, that they have a little giggly talk about boys. which is particularly well written. It's particularly well written. But there's a bit where Gwyneth tunes into what Rose is, her mind and the present day stuff, which reminded me a little bit of the wedding of River Song, where they had those flying cars and stuff like that with the balloons. It painted more of that sort of image in my mind than the image of that was originally depicted. I don't know why.
Okay. Me either.
But that particular scene is really, really good. I quite enjoyed that scene. Not necessarily. Yeah. I think it's just character building, wasn't it? It wasn't really sort of necessary to the story, but it did work really well.
Well, they did mention Bad Wolf.
Yes, the Big Bad Wolf, that's right. But that's the only reason they put it in, wasn't it? So there could be a mention of the Big Bad Wolf, But you can see why Russell T. Davis fell in love with
Eve. I think Eve Miles did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I'm saying you can see why Russell T. Davis fell in love with Eve Miles and wanted to bring her back in some way.
Because of her noughts.
That's a shame we couldn't have got Nicola Bryant on, isn't it?
I don't know. I think Eve Miles actually tops
say
on that.
Actually,
I'm going to start a new Facebook page called Eve Miles North.
Hurry up.
But anyway, there's a seance which Dickens sort of he's not too sure about, isn't he? But he eventually sort of agrees to take part in. And this is where we speak to the or Gwyneth sort of channels the Gelf through them, and the Gelf make themselves out to be innocent aliens that just want to use the bodies, because
I like the double voice they have on that, with the child's voice and the adult's voice at the same time. Really well done.
No, absolutely, yes. Very effective. And again, that was quite a good twist. I mean, watching it first time round, I don't think anybody would have thought that. Well, maybe the clever people, but I wouldn't have thought they were evil. I would have thought they were just trying to, get into this world. Maybe I was a bit stupid, I don't know. But when they turned evil, the way they sort of turned red, I thought that was borrowed by Moffat in the Curse of the Bad Plot. What's it called again? Yeah, that one. That idea was borrowed with the siren, who was nice and blue. And
isn't red the international colour of evils? And stop traffic lights.
That I thought black was the international colour of evil, because the master is always black, isn't he? And so was the Black Guardian. So was the Rani. Just say,
the master, Black Guardian, and the Rani, and your dog's growling.
He's just having a slight disagreement with Star. Yeah, and of course, when these Gelfs start coming through and they're evil, he sort of turns red, and all the other Gelfs are still blue, flying around the room. And all the bodies sort of come. And there was, that's what you're talking about, the gruesome bit, wasn't it, with another neck-breaking instance when the Undertaker bloke gets his neck snapped and instantly turns into one of the zombies.
I think this episode was one of the first ones that I showed my kids. Yeah. Kind of. I think we all watched it together.
Were they put off by the scariness?
No, absolutely not.
Good.
The only time we ever had an issue with scariness was Blink.
Oh, that surprised me. I didn't find Blink particularly scary. I just thought it was absolutely riveting and superb. I loved it. Love Blink. Anyway, so this is at this point that Dickens realises that these being gaseous creatures, one way he could perhaps stop them is by turning off all the gas and then opening up all the gas into the little... Were they in like not a dungeon? It was the what they call a cellar, wasn't it? They were in the cellar. And just flood the place with the gas and...
Oh, and the doctor walked into the cellar and goes, talk about Bleak House.
So, of course, he says he's going to do it. He's going to light the flame to explode it. But Gwyneth, I keep calling her Gwen. I wonder why. Insists that she can do it because she can hold them there and stuff. So, of course, Rose doesn't know this because Rose, obviously, if she hadn't been told to leave, would have probably stopped all this from happening. So Rose has gone. He's been talked out of staying. And, of course, Gwyneth... lights the thing, boom, and that's the end of Gwyneth. Oh God,
Gwyneth.
And the girl.
Well, she.
And of course, the doctor. Then that's another really good little scene between the doctor and Rose, where he has to explain, you know, what happened in relation to the death of Gwyneth. And they could have actually elaborated on that a little bit. I think Rose got over that a bit quickly, didn't she? Because initially she was completely mortified by the fact that the doctor had sort of allowed this situation to develop. But she got over it quite quickly, because obviously there's quite a cheerful scene at the end when they say goodbye to Dickens. And then there's another scene that Moffat borrowed, or actually Richard Curtis borrowed, when he asks if his books are, you know, still known in the future. It's a bit similar to the bit where Van Gogh is brought to the future to see his work and how people love it. So it's obviously something slightly borrowed there from Richard
something
Curtis.
Something old, something borrowed, something blue.
But I mean, I've already said at the top of this particular review that it's brilliant, another brilliant episode.
Mm. When was this?
Simon Callow, a modern day classic, as far as Doctor
Who
goes.
What date was this broadcast? Because it's really the first Christmas episode. Because it's
It's not obviously. Yeah, it's a Christmas themed episode rather than a Christmas special. Yes,
I think it was first broadcast sometime around the 9th of April 2005.
I was hoping that somebody might have a Wikipedia page open.
Oh, darn.
I think though. Hold on, you missed one of the best bits of the whole episode, if not the first series.
I thought I might do, you know. I had a funny feeling I might do that. And you're going to tell me what it is.
I will tell you right now.
Excellent.
Which is where Dickens, Doctor and Dickens have got back to the funeral parlour, place, house type thing.
Yeah.
Doctor's gone in, and Dickens is standing at the door, and the gas starts blowing up a little bit. Giving a bit of
oh yes
yeah
Dickens is there and he says, "What the Shakespeare's going on?"
Yes. Which is
phenomenally good writing, and it's so, you know, just brilliant.
I'm so glad you picked up on that, because I'd forgotten that bit. Yeah, that's one of my favourite bits. I thought that was... Alicia picked up on that. She actually giggled when that bit went out. She has watched it loads of times, but there's certain bits that do make you giggle. That was really good.
To admit, though, it did take me about 6 seconds to think, hold on, what's the Shakespeare's going on? What quote should he... Oh, what the Dickens is going on? Ah, I get it now. But I love that. I think that's such a fantastically well-written line, and just added so much. And Simon Callow is phenomenal.
The most recent series is able to reprise his role as briefly as Dickens, which was nice.
But the thing is now, because of something like Doctor Who, because of his performance in Doctor Who as Charles Dickens, whenever I think of Charles Dickens now, I just think of Simon Callow. And that just proves what a fantastic job he did.
God, absolutely,
I think everyone in this episode specifically did a fantastic job, except for those extras you pointed out before.
Have a look at that.
Mingling around.
Go back and just watch that theatre scene closely.
Yes.
I didn't notice it before. It was Alicia that spotted it. And you notice something like that, look out for it. But it's got to be worth seeing again just to see some of the
apart from those extras who didn't have any lines, I think everyone else did a fantastic job.
Well, it's just reminiscent of the extras in Destiny of the Daleks, when, you know, the ones that get done in by the Daleks and sort of fall to the ground with smiles on their faces, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes.
I'm in Doctor Who and I'm dead. Bye.
I'm a Doctor Who.
Oh, who's that one go?
You also missed out the fact that this is it was another mention of Time War.
Yes.
Because obviously the Gelf mentioned that the Time War destroyed their planet or whatever, or destroyed most of them, or destroyed their form. And that's another episode, another mention of this elusive Time War, of which we've heard lots but seen nothing.
And the Doctor gets this interesting expression on his face when
I was
going to
say that. Amazing acting from Chris.
Yes.
Well, he's just brilliant, isn't he? That's like Louise was saying, though, that, you know, it's just such a shame that he was so brilliant as the Doctor, but he hasn't given him anything back. You know, he hasn't got involved in the world of Doctor Who. And I think that there's no other sort of person in Doctor Who history that's so prominent that's just not wanted to have anything to do with, you know, the conventions or anything to do with the show. And it's such a shame because he gave so much and then, so far, hasn't been able to sort of back it up with anything.
Right at the beginning, before Rose went off and got changed, when she was standing there in her civvy clothes, and Doctor says, "You can't go out like that, you'll start a riot." He directs her to the wardrobe room or whatever it is in TARDIS. You know, first left, second right, third on the left, go straight ahead, under the stairs, past the bins, fifth door on your left. Mm-hmm. Which is the first time we've got the sense that TARDIS is still a massive thing.
Yeah.
And again, a really well written line. And when she comes back and he just looks up and goes, "Oh, you look beautiful."
Yeah.
You can't argue with him there.
It's a shame he didn't say, you look beautiful, I think. That's what Tom Baker's line was. You're a very good looking woman.
He said,
possibly.
He said, considering. Considering what?
Considering. Yeah, considering.
You're human.
Right, you do. I think you look right fit in those clothes. Let's go out to Manchester and go clubbing. that would have been a interesting one.
One thing I'd really like to mention is at the beginning you have Sneed lighting a gas lamp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a clue into the whole ending of the story, because they use the gas lamp to get rid of the girl.
Ah, yes. Very good.
So therefore, you needn't watch the whole thing. You can just watch the beginning and know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
For wasting your time
when you first saw it.
And one thing I will say, obviously, this is all set at night, this story, but it does lend to the sort of atmosphere of late 1860s Cardiff, or Britain, for that matter. It was very, it was brilliant.
It was Wales.
I say Britain. But it was, you did believe you were there. It was brilliantly, the actual locations they used and stuff. And it's really, really, obviously the BBC is particularly good with costume dramas, etc. anyway, but it was very, very good on that score. Talking of scores, what did you think of Russell? what did you think of Murray Gold's score for this particular episode?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the football.
Very funny.
I really liked it. There are a few pieces that are reused in other episodes, but I think that's because he did a fantastic job with many things he did for the first year of New Who. Notice why I avoided using either word that we've been arguing about.
Well done. I did resist the temptation of asking Louise, because I thought, well, that'll only drag it back up again, and I don't want it, but I could have done, couldn't I? But I know what she would have said, but I'm not going to say. So, Ben, I did send you the charts. Do you, by any chance, have them?
Yeah. I remembered we hadn't done them, actually.
Good. I'm glad you did. I spent quite a long time compiling those last night.
Just got to find them. I wasn't very happy with the results that I'd actually seen on there.
I thought. It's an impossible podcast releasing shows. They didn't do one. They very kindly avoided releasing a show last week, which enabled us to move up a position. And then the Oodcast come along and spoil things again. But never mind.
Yet again, we're doing this whole thing where we're mentioning other podcasts.
Well, you're just about to do it anyway.
Well, yes, but maybe we should be concentrating on ourselves first. And then if other podcasts want mentions on our podcast, then maybe they should start paying
us. Please bear in mind, none of the other podcasts had Louise Jameson on.
Well, not this week anyway. We don't know.
No, wait, hang on.
What?
Yes. Never mind. I knew what you were going to say then.
Yes.
Right, the charts. Starting, as ever, at the bottom. Which is a good place to start. At number 30, a re-entry for Tim's Take On. At 29, down one, The Drunken Time Travel. And at 28, down one, The Cultdom Collective. 27's a re-entry for Arrow of Time. At 26, it's up four for The Who Story. And at 25, also up four, is The Sonic Toolbox. 24, down three, is The Galleycast from France. And at 23, up one, Travelling the Vortex. 22 is a re-entry for Dirty Hooers. And at 21, down four, for The Ha! Penis Patrol. At 20, a re-entry for The 2-Minute Time Lord. At 19, down three for Articles of the Shadow Proclamation. And at 18, down four for Ian Todd World. 17, re-entering, it's the TARDIS Tavern, or maybe rematerialising. And at 16, down four for Doctor Who. Who's he? 15 is down six for The Pharos Project. And 14, down four is Staggering Stories. 13 is a re-entry for Doctor Who Review Today. And at 12, a re-entry for The Kurinoinoi Podcast. At 30, down three, The Mostly Harmless Cutaway. And into the big top 10. Up one, it's Bad Wills. Number 9, a re-entry for The Doctor Who Cast. At number 8, slightly disappointingly down three, for The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hey!
Yay!
Yay!
All together or not at all, please. At number 7, a re-entry for The Impossible Podcast. At 6, a re-entry for The Oodcast. And at 5, a re-entry for The Flashing Blade. Number 4, I'm going to ask a question in a minute. Number 4, down 1 for The DWO Whocast. At 3, down 2, last week's number 1 pop pickers was The Doctor Who Podcast, which means this week's number 2 is a non-mover for Radio Free Scaro, and number 1 a re-entry for The Tin Dog Podcast.
Congratulations, Tin Dog Podcast. Go on, then. Go ask what I dread to think. No.
It's just to do with charts. Okay?
Yes.
Because a lot of these are re-entries. But if it's a new episode of the podcast, it's not a re-entry, it's a new entry. Even though the podcast has appeared in the list before, that edition of the podcast hasn't. So therefore, it's a new entry, not a re-entry. Because if it was a re-entry, it would be the old episode coming back into the top 30. Where it's not, it's a new entry.
I'm a bit astounded that pedantry is becoming contagious.
They're re-entries because they've just blown up a spaceship and they're re-entering the atmosphere.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of spaceships that's been blown up this week.
Oh, dear.
And four re-entries above us. And we've recorded a new episode. So are they all old episodes that people would prefer to listen to? These other shoddy podcasts?
Moving on.
Now, I realize that while I was out of the room, you finished up the stuff on The Unquiet Dead, but I just wanted to, did you bring up the great thing about the directions to the TARDIS wardrobe?
We did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, we were doing our job properly.
For once.
How dare you.
Yes, I bought that one up. It's okay. I did it on behalf of you.
We only got one bit of feedback this week.
Oh, no.
Yeah, can you guess who that was from?
Colin Baker.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. The Unquiet Dead. The first three episodes have taken place in the present, the future, then the past.
Clever.
We have the first mention of the time rift in Cardiff. The Doctor misjudges the Gelf, and most of the characters die, except Dickens, who has not long to live. The line, "Looks like that," is used by Dickens when he sees the old lady glowing. It was used by the steward in the previous episode, when he saw the little metal creature. The Doctor is alarmed that Rose has been kidnapped, but how does he know? Never mind the mystery of Edwin Drood. What about the mystery of what Adam is planning for this episode? Bye for now.
And the funny thing being that it was a mystery for you lot as well.
Yes.
Thank you, Ian. Yes, that was it. Thanks, everyone, for your feedback. Rhys said, talking to someone very exciting and very lovely on Skype. It's nice of you to say so, Rhys. Thank you so much for finally getting a bit of recognition.
Well, I'd say that every week if it was you. Stop it.
It wasn't me you're talking about then.
No.
I'll read the rest of it then.
I was talking to someone very excited and not so lovely on Skype. That would be you.
Thanks. So must have been talking about you then, Ben.
You know I don't mean it.
Ooh.
Well, anyway, somebody called Kirby Bartley Sloan, my Omega Podcast Prize signed picture plus me and the girls. That's available not only on the Omega Podcast page, it's on our page too. So if you want to see Kirby in his... What colour scarf is that, Kirby?
It's an incorrect Fourth Doctor scarf.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see, because I've only got a small thumbnail of the picture I'm looking at. I've seen the full-size version. And your middle daughter seems to be quite keen on hiding a face with the prize.
Yes. that picture is autographed by, I'm going to get these names wrong, some Big Finish people, Jason Hay Ellery, Beth Chalmers, Richard Dinnick, and then the comic book guy, Tony Lee. And also someone named Benjamin Cook, who I think had kind of a co-authorship of a book with Russell T. Davies.
excellent.
Yeah, so that's it's pretty cool. Yeah. And also it's a nice picture of...
Are you saying it's more cooler than the Jelly Babies you won from our show
those were the cool.
Jameson being on the podcast.
No, the Jelly Babies were cool, and we took the picture in the same place on the front porch.
Yes, yeah, so I did notice that, actually. I thought it was like a cardboard cutout, and you just stuck the different prize in it.
Well, you can see some of my button collection there on the scarf.
Yeah.
My prisoner number 6, and the next one says Vogon Literary Critic. And then I don't remember where I got that snarl. I think that's a Phil Folio. he's a science fiction artist. I think he drew that.
Excellent. Yeah, so limited on feedback this week, unfortunately. So come on, people. Right.
What about Robert?
Yeah, what about Robert?
I don't know if that counts as feedback, though. I suppose it does in a way. Doesn't. It gives good wishes and stuff. Yes, it's difficult to sort of... do a light-hearted podcast and talk about the serious condition that our friend Robert is in at the moment. I know it has been posted on Facebook, but I don't think all of our listeners just go on Facebook or whatever. Robert's very...
I don't go on Facebook at all.
No, that's a good point, though, isn't it? So you don't go on. That must be a couple of people at least don't. Robert, our friend, obviously, very, very seriously at the moment. He's in hospital. He's had problems with his bowel. He's had a perforated bowel, which they've had to perform a bypass on. This was a few months ago. So he's been living with a stigma bag, which his sort of bowels have still been malfunctioning. And over Christmas, he had to go in a hospital because he was poorly. He's developed an infection. They've had to induce a coma. His brother's been communicating all this to me, thanks to his brother for that, and they're obviously very, very worried. He's got tubes and all sorts of things coming out of him. They're hoping to induce the coma to save all his energy so he can fight the infection, but his brother said they just hope he's got the strength to pull through, and it's very serious and we're all very, very worried about him. So I'm hoping that he can come back and he'd better listen to this show and enjoy it, but and he might realise how worried everybody is about him, but it's so hard, you know, trying to do a... And it's a show he loves. This is why I want to carry on doing it. Because Robert would have, you know, if he was coherent, he'd want us to carry on doing the show, because he's been something that's kept this show alive with his enthusiasm and his, you know, even when he's very poor, he's still coming on and doing it. So this show's for you, Robert. Just a shame you couldn't have been there, obviously, with Louise being on it. And hopefully, you know, you will be back in a couple of weeks' time.
Hear, hear. Miss you, Robert. Yes. And hopefully, when you come out of your coma and you download all of the ex-podcasts that you've missed, not only will it push us up in the charts a bit, but you'll realise, as Adam said, that, you know, we do miss you. And
you'll be better too.
And I would like to thank, obviously, the people that have gone on, you know, where things have been posted on Twitter and Facebook and given their good wishes. You know, all know who you are, and thank you very much. And I'm sure that he'll appreciate it when he's had a chance to read them all. We certainly appreciate it as well. So, next week, we'll be looking at episode 4
and
5.
Oh, no, don't say it. Don't say it. I don't want to deal with that one.
What's Aliens of London and World War III?
Yeah, and World War III.
Yes, episodes 4 and 5 of the new series. It's a double whammy, and hopefully we'll have some feedback to read and some positive news about various people, etc., etc. So,
Yes, Aliens of London, and remember what those aliens are.
I know, we'll just have to...
No.
We'll just skip over the actual of aliens. Mr. Davis.
So we have gaseous creatures, 3 episodes in a row.
Yeah, and you've got me and Magic as well on the podcast, which is a bit...
Yes.
Does rather...
Oh, we have another... Get another proto-Torchwood sort of thing.
Indeed. But we'll talk about that next week.
Yes. The Aliens of London was first broadcast on the 16th of April here in Australia, and that's my birthday.
Excellent. And Ben has not sunk underwater once during this show, and I can't quite understand why.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
Right, what I think it is because my laptop's about a year and a half old now, and it is pretty rubbish. It's not a well-known make, put it that way, but it was bought for me by my mother in an emergency when my last laptop just completely broke down. And
it was thrown across the room.
Was Deb there?
No, it did actually just kind of like working one day. So it's not the best laptop in the world, and it's always had problems with overheating.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do tend to sit on my leather sofa with my laptop next to me, with the laptop on the seat. And so, it used to get quite hot. But to try and counteract that, I used to put like DVD cases underneath it, so it had a little bit of room underneath it to get some air in. And try to cool it down. Didn't work so well. But over the weekend, I kind of like started reading about these like boards with fans in that you put your laptop in that sucks in the cold air and pushes the cold air into your computer. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like quite a good idea. So I bought one of them, and it's taken the running temperature down from 104 centigrade to somewhere where it's currently on 80, but we've had it on for a good few hours now. But it generally runs at about 50-60. And so therefore the process is not working so hard, which is why I think I kept on going underwater, because the process is just too hot.
This week,
because it's the first week with this new board and the fan blowing away nicely underneath it, the process is keeping cool. It's keeping it a steady 75-80 degrees, which is still quite warm, but a lot cooler than it was. And so therefore, that's why I don't think I've gone underwater. But the only bizarre thing about it is, as I said, I used to keep it on like DVD cases or whatever, just put 2 or 3 of them underneath it on each corner, so a little bit of air went through. But now I've got my laptop, which is on top of the little pad thing, which is on top of still CD cases and DVD cases. And so basically my laptop is actually just a game of Jenga.
Excellent.
So let me just see if I can remove one of these DVD cases without it all falling down. So maybe that's why it's working.
Good. I'm glad it is. But there's not a lot of news this week, I'm afraid, in the world of Doctor. Obviously, very soon, on Wednesday, in fact, the NTA, National Television Awards, with hopefully people have listened to me and voted for Doctor Who and Matt Smith and Karen Gillan, who are up for awards. And also, Karen Gillan herself is appearing on the 26th. And I got the time wrong last week.
I thought you were
going to
say the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Wow.
nice to get Nicola Bryant on, wouldn't it? But yeah, so she's playing in that.
If Nicola Bryant were ever to hear about what.
I'm thinking, well, I did tweet it and attached her name to the tweet, so she must know about
stay
it somewhere
far
on.
Far away from us.
I disagree. So I think she'd be on here like a shot.
I've been seeing some of her tweets. That could be the case.
Yeah, maybe.
You haven't mentioned the Stephen Moffat news from this week.
I'm aware of the Stephen Moffat news from this week.
Stephen Moffat this week, our glorious leader and great big.
Went underwater.
Appropriate time. He was saying last week that the Doctor Who anniversary will be, quote, amazing for fans.
Right, so it won't be any good then, basically.
Well, no, it will be amazing for fans.
Only four fans will be four fans or
four fans will be amazed. Yeah, right. No,
I don't understand. What does that have to do with a means of cooling someone?
For God's sake!
I know you're about 4 hours behind. Anyway, Stephen Moffat was basically
killed
saying,
Adam.
There will never be a better time, I promise you, to be a Doctor Who fan.
Scottish.
Oh, we've become the Staggering Stories podcast.
Yes.
he did say that the next series will be at least 14 episodes, didn't he? Which was tantalising. So it'll be like means it'll be 15 episodes then, maybe.
So here we go. Here's another quote from him. He says,
14 and a half.
For so many reasons I can't talk about yet, there will never be a better time to be a Doctor Who fan. I absolutely promise that, just like you promised at the last week. Don't believe you. He said he's got huge and extensive plans for the anniversary year, and as has been previously reported, Matt Smith says they should do a 3D episode, including as many of the old Doctors who will come back. And the other good thing I've noticed this week, which is Noel Fielding, who you may or may not know from... You do know him from, yeah? You do know him, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of him. He was at the Isle of Wight Festival last year with Kasabian, came on as a guest.
Was he?
Prancer.
He's obviously from the Mighty Boosh, who are a very funny comedy duo. He said that he'd like to appear in Doctor Who, and I think he could do a very good job because he's a very funny man.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, what's obvious? I have no idea what that is.
Never mind.
And one more thing, Fern Britton, TV host in this country,
yes.
Not a very good one.
Yeah.
She was on a program called Room 101.
Yeah, and she said she hated Doctor Who, didn't she?
Yeah, she said that it was incredibly boring and very dull. So, Fern Britton, you can...
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. I've gone right off her now.
I never liked her.
I bet she's never even watched the program.
That'll save her.
Yeah. Well, that's blown the chance.
Well, she can't be particularly interesting herself as she got kicked off this morning in favour of Holly Willoughby. Willoughby, sorry. As I say, Karen Gillan on 26th of January appearing on BBC 4 in the evening between 9:30 and 11 o'clock in that film that I mentioned last week, which is called Kirby. It's not called Kirby, it's called...
I don't remember.
Something about Manhattan. I can't remember what it's called.
We'll Take Manhattan.
That's the one. So that, I'm really looking forward to that.
I don't think I'm going to be able to see it then because it's... There, not here.
Correct.
So
I'll send it to your mega upload.
Oh dear.
While you're talking about Karen Gillan, it's also in the news last week. It's split up with her boyfriend.
Oh, excellent.
So if you fancy a Scottish-sounding ginger-haired woman, there's plenty of them in Scotland.
Oh. So Adam Purcell must be really excited at this point. I've lost what I was going on about now. Wednesday. Wednesday, National Television Awards. Fingers crossed for Doctor Who, but I bet you Sherlock wins it all. Either way, Stephen Moffat's going to end up with a great big smile on his face. Until next week. Thank you very much for listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 96. I forgot to mention it at the
96.
Beginning. Yes.
96, you say?
96.
So we've got 97 next week.
Yeah. February the 20th.
97. Well, I don't know. Which one are we going to make my birthday podcast?
Where's your birthday on a Monday?
No, that's the thing. It's on a Saturday.
We'll have to make it.
So,
a, just past your birthday. You can either make it
the one before.
Unless you want to get people to send you presents, we'll have to have it the one before to give them time.
Well, I suppose actually we could make it both. We could do a one before and one...
For those been many people that have got Ben's birthday, that sort of thing, on the one afterwards.
Yeah, which is the 4th of February, which is now only some days away, 11, something like that. Next Saturday, basically. Yeah. Don't be missing it. You know, you can send your cards to the 20 Megabyte Doc 2 podcast, Ben's birthday special double edition show, The Isle of Wight.
Thank you. And also, don't forget emails. Yes, don't emails, etc. to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com and just, you know, join our Facebook group, the 20 Megabyte Doc 2 podcast.
Don't send presents there because they won't be proper presents. I'm talking about proper presents.
Yes.
You know, I want, like, DVDs and... I'll tell you what, why didn't all of our podgrammers go to whoone.co.uk, who seem to have escaped a mention again so far?
I was just about to mention them.
Whoone.co.uk was that?
Yeah, whoone.co.uk.
Who?
One.co.uk.
Oh dear.
Anyway, you can go there and buy me any of the DVDs and send them to my house.
Anyone, even ones you've already got?
Ben's House, England. It will find me.
Well, talking of whoone.co.uk, they have got the...
whoone.co.uk?
Yeah, the Doctor Who magazine I haven't got yet and I'm desperate to get. And that's the latest issue, which has a free CD of Tom Baker playing the Doctor on a Big Finish thing.
Oh, really?
I can get that
magazine here as well.
I may be wrong, but it's episode. Sorry, it's DWM 443. You do get
I'll
a free
go to
CD,
the bookstore and check.
I want it.
That's my PIN number.
I want it too.
Thank you for that. there's a Big Finish Companion 1, which is, what is it? It's a Doctor Who play referenced in the Gallifrey play Blind Eye. They do actually stock a lot of Big Finish CDs and stuff.
whoone.co.uk.
The Unit Files DVD box set, which I haven't got yet, and I desperately want. Anybody wants to buy it for me, please do, because it contains two stories I haven't got.
If whoone.co.uk ever wants to send me something,
send it to me first before you want to send it off to Kirby. It's cheaper postage sending it to me, by the way.
I was looking the other day online for a DVD of Doctor Who, and immediately, I just went to whoone.co.uk and found their fantastic range of DVDs and Doctor Who merchandise at whoone.co.uk.
And the Where Doctor, Widow and the Wardrobe.
That's whoone.co.uk.
Yeah, the Doctor, Widow and the Wardrobe DVD is out.
Available whoone.co.uk.
The audiobook of Twin Dilemma, which apparently is a lot better than the actual...
I should hope so.
Adam, if I wanted to get the audiobook of that, where would I go?
If you go to whoone.co.uk,
thanks for that. I will go to
£12.99 plus £1.50 postage, plus Art of Death by James Goss, which is a CD book doodah. There's lots of really good things at whoone.co.uk.
Fantastic value and a lovely...
Let's just see what they've got coming soon at whoone.co.uk. Lots of Big Finish things. Companion Chronicles, The Curse of Davros, Big Finish Productions, Endgame book, and The Face of Evil, which is rather topical, featuring Louise Jameson playing Leela on the front cover. That was her first story. So all these things coming soon at whoone.co.uk. And
Adam, I'm slightly confused. Could you please tell me what whoone.co.uk's website address is?
www.whoone.co.uk.
And is that one, as in with a letter, or with a letter, with letters, or with a number one?
No, it's the letters. So whoone.co.uk.
Now, are you spelling dot, D-O-T, or is it...
Wouldn't it be funny if somebody had a website called .co.uk, .co.uk? That'd be quite good. I think I might actually buy that URL.
Then it would be .co.uk. And if it was someone next Guns N' Roses member, then it would be .co.uk.
Very good, yes. Anyway, I've got to cook the dog's dinner. So,
okay.
Oh God, stop being so funny.
Yes. Oh, Louise just texted me. Wasn't Ben funny? There we go.
By the way, happy New Year, everyone. Today is
Chinese New Year. What year is it? Year of the
Dragon. Year of the Black Water Dragon.
Is it?
Yes. Because my 5-year-old was doing it as a school project and I had to find that out for her homework.
Cool.
Why do teachers do that at school? Why do they send 5-year-olds home with homework when they know that it's the adults that...
Well, I get that as well. I've got to create... Well, Isabella's doing something to do with astronomy at the moment, so we're doing the moon phases. Fortunately, I've got a map on my iPhone which tells me exactly what the moon phase is anyway. And another brilliant app on the iPhone, which, you know, we've got conjunction between Venus... shush, between Venus and Neptune and the early evening where I am. It's very bright in the sky, Venus and Neptune. And you can actually... I've actually taken pictures of it. You may notice that on Facebook. In fact, I've taken a picture of that.
You'll find it in the western
planetary
sky.
Doodah.
Venus and Neptune.
But this app, you point it up at the sky, and it actually tells you where your planets are and your constellations.
I've got one of them on my non-iPhone phone.
Have you?
You don't just have to have an iPhone.
Well,
you
actually point it to the area of the sky you're wondering about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Bah, your iPhone's crap.
Oh, shush. So Isabella's doing this astronomy thing, and we've got to create some sort of planet, a surface of a planet for her for a sort of space thing she's doing. She's resisting the temptation to use her micro Doctor Who figures as characters on this particular landscape. So... 5-year-olds and homework, which adults will end up doing. Yeah, I'm doing the bit with the moon phases stuck in a little calendar thing. She has actually reminded me to do it on a couple of occasions.
The other thing I've got to say this week, because we're doing any other business now, clearly.
Yeah.
Is why this is, it just seems wrong to me. On Saturday morning, I took my little one Mia, who's 5 and a half, swimming. Because she's wanted to go for a long time, but because we're both involved in a pantomime at the moment,
it's called My Daily Life.
We went swimming Saturday morning, and what really annoys me is the fact that she wants to go swimming and I don't. But because she's young, she gets in free, and I have to pay.
Reminded me of an earlier episode of this show when you got your daughter on to guilt trip me into letting you off to go to take a swim in.
Yeah. You've got a better memory than me, and that's probably only within the last year.
Can my dad take me swimming now, please?
I can't remember what you're talking about. How bad is my memory?
I'll try and see if I can find that particular clip for you and play it on your
own. I've really got to stop drinking a bottle of vodka a night, haven't I?
That might be a good idea.
Oh, no, you don't.
Anyway. Oh, yes, you're right. I should make it.
I must go, because I was supposed to start cooking the dog's dinners 25 minutes ago.
Oh, well.
You off to Russia?
Eh? If Deb comes in and finds that I haven't started this particular task, I might
laptop.
Have to be... there will be flying laptops.
Wall, laptop, laptop, wall. Meet each other.
Yes.
Again.
So anyway, until next week, thank you all for joining me, and thank you, Louise Jameson and Toby Haydoke, for that. That's brilliant. And,
one more thing.
Oh, good grief. What, goodbye?
Whowon.co.uk.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
No, you wait for my wages, by the way, for the last year.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance.
Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.